This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog.
Imagine Shanahan gave Shovel Day off a stunner.
Just a fake handshake. Sorry, pal. Sorry, Chevy.
You're a loser.
On TSN 1050, making your drive home a lot more fun.
Pretty disappointing news for me today. I thought I was coming up with an invention, and it's already out there, and it's way better than mine.
What did you come up with? Was it like
I actually have like a creative, like invention type mind, but I have one of my best friends is an engineer, and I call him with some of my ideas, and sometimes I flat out will get a hang up because it's stupid, right? But my invention was some type of like iPad device that you put on the wall and you talk to your pets, like your dogs and stuff, so you could FaceTime the animals.
Yes.
That's pretty cool, no?
What do you mean? Like when you're not home?
Yeah. When you're at work, you could FaceTime and it goes up on the screen and the dog comes over and you're like, hey, whatever.
Don't crap on the carpet. Go sit down.
There's something that does that, and there's a machine that spits out dog treats to it.
Really?
So that is way better than mine, and it's already out there.
Why would you think of that, like, unprovoked? Did something...
I think a lot.
You're a big thinker.
Maybe not with this particular job.
I thought it was going to be a ketchup bladder. Remember Kramer came up with the ketchup bladder and dropped it?
Well, that's the one problem. If you want to be an inventor, buddy, you have to make sure things haven't already been invented.
No kidding. I saw it on Facebook. It was like an ad for this new dog. I'll show it to you next break.
I'll tell you what. Dog people, pet people.
They'll do anything.
They're nuts.
They have more disposable income than any other walk of life. I've never seen anything like it. The amount of money that gets spent on dog pets.
Well, you got to polish its teeth. And you do. I'm telling you, you're right. The dog lovers, they'll spend... They'll drive around in a car that's falling apart. They'll spend
Unless
that money on the dog.
Old school, where it's like anything more than a hunch, I'm walking away.
Leaving the dog
That's
there.
Rare, though. You don't find that much anymore.
I think that's very rare.
With the value of a dollar and...
I've talked to people. They're like, yeah, the dog needs... dog has diabetes. And I'm like, what? I don't even know that's possible.
Oh, it's possible.
And the
and
dog
it will
needs
cost
insulin
you
shots and needs all this
fortune, and it's going to happen.
Like $1,200 worth of stuff. I'm like,
you got to walk away.
No, you don't walk away. If it's a big part of your life, if you're a dog person,
I know
you treat that dog like it's your son or daughter.
That's right, because a lot of times people like that's what it is. They're so close that that's what they.
Well, that happened. I'm going to get in trouble for this. My mother-in-law is a big dog person. She's got two
she
great dogs.
She walked away.
No, she didn't. She had the sticker. You know how people have the stickers on the back of their car of the like the dad, the mom, and the kids and their pets? She just had her and the two dogs. And my wife saw her car and said, what about me and Heather? Like, what about the kids? So the kids
have a little
are out.
For the grandkids.
Yeah,
too.
I think the dogs are more important, certainly than me. I mean,
right,
if it's the dogs or me, I am.
You're not
out.
Making the car, for sure.
There's no way. There's
but
no
the
way.
Fact that two dogs were involved. Other than the two
and
kids.
And they're great dogs. I love the dogs. But they're definitely more important than my well-being, for sure. And I accept that. Let's bring in Ray Ferraro. And Ray on Overdrive is a presentation of Sierra. Joint Formula 14. What's happening, Ray?
I'm interested to listen to this dog conversation. My oldest son is renovating his house, so he's living with me, which means I got him, his wife, and you've heard that little dog that barks all the time.
Mm-hmm.
That dog is the king. Like, they take, I'm serious, I think the dog goes to, like, a spa sort of thing.
A day spa.
Yes. He comes back, he's got his nails trimmed, and he's got to, you know, gets his hair cut, and I don't know, whatever the hell else they do. This morning, my head is thumping like it's got a band in it. I'm so tired. The dog has been chasing birds all day. And I said to Cammy, that dog's not going to make it till 5 o'clock today.
Well, you know the
I'm going to do the Hulk Hogan leg drop on this golden doodle snicker thing.
And you'll never talk to your son again because he will disown you if you do it.
It's my house. I'm way down the totem pole here.
Right. Well, and you know the owner of that dog spa, every time an owner leaves that spot, they all laugh and say, that guy just paid me $299 to cut that dog's nails.
Yeah.
To hose it off. Spray him with a hose anyway.
Exactly. Like, we take the dog in the back. They have no idea what we do. We throw a bow on it, and we charge you $299.
Well, they've got this giant, like, silver vat, and they hook the leash up to, like, this, I don't know, arm so that the dog can't jump out, and then they just hose him down. I've watched the process before. It's insane. They charge a lot of money to give the dog a bath. That's basically what they do.
Right.
I got the hairy eyeball from Pat Quinn. We were in training camp up in Gravenhurst. And I made the bus pull over on the 400 so my dogs could get on the bus so I didn't have to go downtown and then all the way back to King City to get the dogs. And I don't think Pat was very happy about that. Three of them. One, two, three. My brother brought them up to the park and ride, and all three of them won it. And he was like, what the hell is going on here?
It's like a kennel.
Yeah.
You're the Maple Leafs. That's outstanding. Well, good luck out there, buddy. At least they were waiting for you to get home with open arms and making sure that everything felt cozy for you after 3 weeks in Europe.
Oh, I thought nice and quiet. The kids will go to school. It'll be nice and quiet, and Buster's chasing bloody birds around. I'm telling you, if I could catch them, I'd finish them.
Well, buddy, you've been over there. If you're drafting number one tomorrow, who are you taking?
Oh, Austin Matthews, for sure.
Attaboy.
Not even. Look, I grew to like Lion A more as a player during the tournament. I really did. I thought he's really good. But Matthews is so good. He is he's the guy you build around. You build around a center or a stud defenseman. If you had the choice, I think. And he is so good. I saw him play seven times. And five of them, he was outstanding. One, he was pretty good. The last game, I didn't think he had anything left in the tank. He was done. But I wouldn't have any worry about taking him at all.
All right. So we saw a lot of must see Austin Matthews clips internally here, but from what you saw over there at the tournament, is there anybody else that's kind of off the radar that you that really grew on you, whether it's a young NHLer or maybe an up-and-coming guy or obviously from a different country? Is there somebody we should be focusing on and saying, like, either this guy's going to be a star or keep an eye on this guy?
Well, I think the Russian guy's name's out there today, Shipachev.
Yeah, Shipachev.
Yeah, he's good, but he's 29, right? And so I worry about a guy like that in that he's played his whole career over there. He's going to come over here, and the game must look like it's upside down for him. You know, like what is he going to be able to do at that age? So he's a really good player. I liked him a lot. I didn't get blown away by Zaitsev, the Russian D that the Leafs have, but I only saw him a couple of times. He looks steady, but not spectacular. Most of the guys are drafted and signed. Anybody you're getting from that tournament, like there's no Panarin this year. Like I didn't see a guy that was like when we watched Panarin last year, we're like, oh my God, that guy's really good. I wonder where he's going. Oh, Chicago, perfect. You know, I didn't see anybody like that. Saw a couple of depth defensemen maybe, but the guys that were most interesting really were the young guys, the draft eligibles.
Well, there was a lot of focus on Morgan Riley, and he'll join us tomorrow at 4:20, so we'll ask him for more detail on how he felt this tournament went. But by all accounts, and based on what I saw, man, he certainly looked like he belonged. I mean, he was basically Canada's number one defenseman.
Oh, for sure. Like, he and Tanev played any matchup, big matchup, that they wanted to get. That was their pair. You know, bigger ice for sure, so you got to be able to get around it. And he has zero trouble navigating himself around the big ice. I think there's a balance going on in his brain right now about offense and defense, about how much he can really push or how many chances he can take. Because I think he's going to be a defenseman that will be in that 35 to 40 plus points all the time. I don't see that being a problem for him. But he played more conservatively over there for sure. But he and Tanev were really good. together. Mike Matheson, the young guy from Florida, he's really good. But the guy that I think stepped out the most there was Ryan Murray from Columbus. And, man, the poor kid had played his first 2 years. He'd played under 80 games combined. He had shoulder surgery, had knee surgery. This year he played every game. And in the tournament, he got better and better and better. Their left side of the defense, as they were protecting that lead, was just basically Murray and Riley. They just rolled them over, the two of them. And then there was Ellis and Tanev. That was their top four that they were riding a lot.
Back to Matthews, there's a bit of a debate right now in terms of whether or not he should be a part of the World Cup and be a part of that under-24 team. And I think it would make sense from a marketing component standpoint, because he's going to be the first overall pick. He's an American kid, so you know that the American media would love that. And the tournament's in Toronto, so he'll sell tickets. He'd sell jerseys here. I would personally have him on, considering it's a contrived event anyway. It doesn't really mean anything. He's playing on a made-up team. What would you make of that, the idea of Matthews being on that team, even though he's never played a game in the NHL?
Well, I guess I'd want to know, who are we comparing him to? You know, like, who are they? Because I think everybody's got, what, six or seven spots, something like that, left to pick. I don't know. He won't be out of place. If he plays, he won't be out of place. At 18, he won't be. I mean, if it's him or, the first name that popped to my head was Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. And I don't know if Nugent-Hopkins is selected. I guess I should probably know these rosters a bit more, but I'm with you, Brian. It's like, I don't know, I'll figure that out come September. There's no grab to it for me yet. But so to say Matthews could or should be on, I'd have to know who he's playing against. I'd pick him ahead of Nugent-Hopkins, and I think Ryan's pretty good. I really do. But for all the reasons you say, it'd be pretty intriguing to have him in the event.
I wonder if the Maple Leafs would want him there, though. His first training camp disrupted in the NHL. I would think Lou may call in a favor and say, please don't even think about that one.
If it's anything like the call of Brad Boys, I mean, it won't be a favor.
Exactly. It'll be Lou Ray Jepsen saying, if you put him on, we will never hear from you again.
Well, how disrupted is camp going to be anyway? Babcock's not going to be there.
That's valid.
That's going to be, I'm real curious, like, if because the event's in Toronto, like, can he get to practice once in a while? I don't even know.
I don't think so. I think they're going to put...
Are they trying to put up a block that you know, guys can't help their respective teams because, you know, Todd McClellan can't, you know,
right.
and other coaches. So I think my understanding, I don't know if it's written in stone, but like basically that he can't help the Toronto Maple Leafs while he's with the World Cup team.
I don't believe he can, and I would think that would apply to players too. I don't think it would be fair that some players – basically, Maple Leaf players are allowed to go back and forth between their respective country or team in the MasterCard Center and get work in on the first power play unit during camp.
But, he'll have my hockey invention. He'll have the iPad out there, FaceTime Lou, and he'll be watching and surveying things.
He might. But, yeah, if I'm the Maple Leafs, I would probably prefer that he took a pass. He's got his international.
Can you imagine if this kid got injured before his first NHL camp?
Well, can you imagine every team that's sitting there and hoping their players get through that tournament? So what about the teams that are or the countries that are trying to qualify for the Olympics? So the Olympic qualifiers are September 1st to 4th. And then those guys are getting on a plane. And they're in Belarus, and I think there's another one. I think there's another one in Latvia. They've got to fly from there to Toronto to take part in this tournament. Like, for example, Yannick Hansen from the Canucks. I know he's one for sure. Nikolai Ehlers from Winnipeg. Those guys are going to play in the Olympic qualifiers. They're going to play 22 minutes a game at the start of September. Then they're going to come and play in this tournament, and then they're going to start their season. Man, the teams must be holding their breaths on that stuff.
with Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst. Game six tonight down in Tampa, a must-win for Pittsburgh, and they're going back to Matt Murray. And this has been just a fascinating topic, the idea of Mike Sullivan flip-flopping over the past couple of games and what it means for Marc-Andre Fleury and his standing within the organization, how much pressure it puts on a 21-year-old in Matt Murray, how much pressure it puts on a new coach in Mike Sullivan. What do you make of the decision, and what are you expecting out of it?
I guess I'm not surprised that they went back to him. I was probably more surprised that they went to Fleury, although I didn't see game four. So I don't know how shaky, if that's the term, Murray was. It didn't seem out of the ordinary to go with Fleury once and see what you get, but now you don't really have a second, or obviously you don't have a chance. Like what if he starts bad, gives up two goals in the first two shots? I guess any goalie can do that, but he hasn't played very much. Like how, I think it would take more, it would be more of a roll of the dice to go with Fleury in game six. Like if you're the goalie, if you're Murray, are you, you know, I mean, there's pressure on him all the time. Like Noodles, would he be like, you know, I don't know if you know either guy, like Fleury wouldn't be ruffled at all, but he would probably get it, wouldn't he?
Yeah, he understands. I just, you know, we were talking bigger picture. Like if you go back to Murray tonight, like I'm looking at worst case scenario. So say he loses. You probably would have had to have a conversation with Jimmy Rutherford or you know, even Mario to start Marc-Andre Fleury tonight, because now you've basically said in the biggest game of the season, we're going with the 21-year-old kid. So, you know, the relationship between Marc-Andre Fleury, like you're going to probably have to deal with that. And then there's really a no-win situation, really, because if Marc-Andre Fleury started and they lose, they say, well, why the hell didn't you start Matt Murray? If Matt Murray starts tonight and loses, not only the 21-year-old kid, it's not a big deal for them because he's the future of the goaltending in net, but it's the bigger picture is what's going to happen to Marc-Andre Fleury this summer or moving forward, because you've basically said that Murray's our guy.
But aren't you going to, realistically, if there's an expansion draft, they're doing that anyway.
Yes, you're right. And they'll probably announce, you know, there is going to be an expansion, I would think, either announced at the draft or sometime somewhere soon, and you have to plan for that. I think, you know, my biggest concern is I think this is an organizational decision. It's not just Sullivan going, I want to go with this guy. You probably had to run that one up the chain because Jimmy Rutherford gets paid to deal with those types of messes when it goes south.
Yeah, this is such a different story than, you know, what St. Louis is doing with Allen and Elliott.
Right.
Fleury's just a different, he's just a different category of player to what he's meant to the organization. And it's funny because if he doesn't get hurt, then Matt Murray's wearing a ball hat all year or all playoffs, and it's going to be Fleury's net. But now the kid comes in and, you know, what did he take over in game three of the first series and was awesome. And so I guess I would really have a tough time given the circumstance of going back to Fleury today. I don't know that he was, I mean, man, what's he going to do on the overtime goal? If his shot's 6 feet wide, hits the guy in the back. If that misses the net and they go down and win, well, then it's a great decision. And I guess that's probably why, you know, coaches are bald or gray. It's because every decision now is just, man, it's just so paramount. And the goaltender, of course, is the one that everybody's gonna wonder about the most.
What did you think of Hitchcock's comments regarding Tarasenko? I know Craig touched on it last night. He was like, the playoffs are for veterans, and this guy, he's inexperienced. He's got to get through it. He's got to do this. I mean, isn't it somehow you got to find out a way to get that guy going and make him feel good about his game? I know ultimately there can be tough love at times, but the comments seemed a little bit ridiculous.
Well, the problem with them, like I think we probably all agree that there's very few rookies that come in and are young guys and, you know, are not bothered by the playoffs and they just produce as it is. But like, wouldn't I, without being there, wouldn't you think that you'd want to pump up his tires and say, no, absolutely. I'm sure he's going to get it something tomorrow.
He's our best player. Like, he's going to come through. Or
We need him to come through, and we think he's going to for sure. If you say it's for veteran players, like, if you're Tarasenko, do you not go, well, oh, and I'll give it a go, and I got 6 years left on my deal. So, you know, like, I don't know. I don't get the psychology of it. I don't understand it at all. He's had a tough go, and it's not going to get easier because every time he's on the ice, they got somebody standing right inside his uniform. Like, it's hard to get any space. I'm telling you guys, I came back, I turned on the TV last night. It looked like the game was being played in a hallway compared to what I've watched for 3 weeks.
No kidding, huh?
I was blown away by, like, a power play was entering the zone, and I'm like, there's nowhere to go. Like, it was really, really obvious. So for Tarasenko, who's the best player, and they're trying to take all his air away, he's going to have to learn to find it. And maybe that does take time. You know, not anywhere near the player he was, but I felt way better in the playoffs once I'd been through it a couple of times, as opposed to the first time, you're like, oh, my God, everything is way tougher.
Did you know that Vladimir Putin was going to be showing up for that gold medal game?
No idea. And I'm telling you, when he came out, they announced, you know, the president, and then they said it in Russian. And then they said, and that could have been the president of Skoda, right? Like, who knows who it is. And they said, as soon as they said the Russian Federation, you could hear the crowd gasp. It was, I've never seen that. It was unbelievable what it was like when he came out on that podium. And then when he left, it took us about 30 minutes to clean up, you know, doing whatever we were doing. As we were walking out across the parking lot from the rink was this, like, convention center where all the hospitality stuff was. And the top two floors were all dark. They were usually all lit up. It was all dark. And then you heard, it sounded like a military helicopter taking off from the back right corner. And that was obviously him. It was amazing to see. Like, amazing. There were the guys from Hockey Canada were saying, like, there were a bunch of guys downstairs in suits with umbrellas. What do you think the umbrellas were?
Yeah, what's that all about?
Well, I'm pretty sure they had a trigger. I mean, there's no rain in the rink.
Just in case, huh?
Yeah.
They said, like, it was, you got down there and you're like, oh, there's another guy with an umbrella. Interesting.
Well, when you say they were gasping collectively, is that out of fear, out of respect? I mean, we've got this image of Putin and Russia over here, but being there for 3 weeks, I mean, do you come away feeling different about their culture and different about the country?
Oh, yeah, I do, for sure. I think it was of respect, for sure, because how often would you ever see your leader, you know, especially he comes into a hockey rink.
Right.
You know, it's not like it's a staged event. This is what I got out of Russia. It, like, when we were in St. Petersburg, it was unbelievable. It didn't necessarily feel like Russia, whatever I had pictured. You know, like, it seemed more free. It seemed like a North American city in a lot of ways. There's some crazy stuff. I mean, there's people parking on the sidewalk with their car. I don't quite get that. They were building a 2-mile-long stretch of sidewalks, and they all had shovels. Like, anybody got a loader? Like, it'll go way faster. The guy was cutting the stone, like, with those cement stone cutters, right in the middle where people were walking. Like, there's cement dust blowing all over the place. Would never be here. But then when we got to Moscow, that felt like, I don't know, that felt different. That was what, I was a little uncertain walking around there.
Right.
Like, that felt like
the
right
wild
under
west.
The surface, there's a lot of shady stuff going on.
It's the Wild West. That's the way I termed it. It's Moscow, I always felt, was like New York East, but there was some edge to it because you can do anything at any time. And I agree with you, Ray. Like, I never felt in danger, but I never felt completely safe. You were always kind of on high alert as to, okay, what's around the next corner.
Did you ever get in a cab there?
Oh, yeah. Well, our interpreter just, you could put your hand out and point at the road, and any car will pull over and pick you up. It's just like Uber for anybody.
Two of our camera guys got into a car. It was 700 rubles from the hotel to the rink. So on the way back, the cabbie turns around and goes, 4,000 rubles. And they're like, we're not paying you 4,000 rubles. So he shows them something on his phone, and it showed number or amount of taxes and amount to the business. And they're like, yeah, fine. It's 700 here, 700 back. And the guy turns around and goes, 3,000. Like, he just made up a price.
He's just winging it.
Yeah, that's what they do.
And what are you going to do? The guy pulls up two blocks short of your hotel, and he's like, you know, gives you a price. And you're like, oh, man, I just got screwed on this. It's like they do what, but who's, there's so many people. Like, I don't even know how you would, who's in charge?
Well,
like,
that's it. That's it.
You never saw a police car, but you saw, like, military guys everywhere. Yeah. It was a weird, weird dynamic. The people themselves were, for the most part, were really friendly and open, and like it was pretty cool. But it was different for sure.
Well, it's good to have you back, buddy. And
it's good to be back. I will tell
imagine.
You that.
I can imagine, even though the house sounds like it's an absolute gong show right now. But
well, I got 32 minutes before the kids get home from school, and I can't even imagine.
All right, shut it down for about 25 if you can.
That'll be for 31 of them.
Okay. We'll do it again tomorrow at 5 p.m.
See you, boys.
There he is, Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst, and Ray on Overdrive was a presentation of Sierra Joint Formula 14. Yeah, Moscow has that vibe to it, that reputation where there's no checks and balances. You go over there and do whatever you want.
I mean, you can't call the police. There's some that'll just shake you down. Like, yeah, no problem. Come on over here. Jump in the back of my car and give me your passport. That was what I was warned about. Do not give anybody your passport because it'll cost you money to get it back.
And you have to pay.
You have to pay.
You've got to get it back.
When I signed in Russia, I called a few guys. Freddie Brathbate was one of the guys I called. He said, how much? Like, I said, I'm going to Russia. He goes, how much time do you have? I talked to him for like an hour and a half, and he had story after story after story. But he loved it there, but he said it's a different world.
I'd like to go over there once, check it out.
Yeah.
Stick around for a few days, but it's not high on my priority list.
It's a beautiful country, but there's a difference between Moscow and Russia. They're different. Moscow is real. I mean, it's like New York. And then outside
it's buzzing, it's alive.
Outside of Moscow, it's like going back into 1961.
We'll head down to Cleveland next. Tony Rizzo will join us from ESPN Cleveland. We'll get you a perspective on how Cavaliers fans and media are feeling about this series all of a sudden, because people in Toronto feel pretty optimistic after the Raptors rolled through Toronto and picked up two wins, and now they're back in Cleveland for Game 5 tomorrow night. So Tony will set the scene on that. We'll get back into what I believe, and I think we all do, was the biggest win in the history of this franchise. Mm-hmm. We'll touch on that next.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog. Your drive home just got a lot more fun on TSN 1050, the voice of Toronto sports.
All right, we should point out that we have two pairs of tickets to see the Marlies take on the Hershey Bears in Game 3 of the Calder Cup Eastern Conference Final tomorrow night. Puck drop at 7:30, so we will give away two pairs of tickets at some point between now and 7 p.m. Marlies are down 0-2 at this point, so they've got to get rocking.
They got to grind back.
Yeah, so we'll give away those two pairs of tickets at some point between now and 7 p.m.
Did you ever think you'd have to say the Marlies have to take a page out of the Raps playbook?
I was not expecting to say that, not after the first two games in Cleveland, but all of a sudden there is optimism percolating throughout this fan base, man. People are starting to feel it, and they're looking at Cleveland and thinking, A, they're human, B, Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving really aren't doing anything, so it's basically all on LeBron, and Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan, if they're going to play like they did last night,
watch out.
They can roll with these guys. Again, they're still underdogs. They've got to find a way to win in Cleveland. Right. And we saw what happened the last time they were in that building. It was ugly. But they have to be feeling a lot more confident today. And let's head down to Cleveland now, catch up with Tony Rizzo from ESPN Cleveland. How would you compare the mood in Cleveland today, Tony, to that of 4 or 5 days ago when the Cavs left town up 2-0?
Well, guys, first of all, you know that if the Marlies win, they're going to be facing the Lake Erie Monsters, who are up 2-0 and have a game tonight here at Quicken Loans Arena.
Wow,
so
love
it. We are looking forward to that. The Monsters are up on Ontario, California. But seriously, for a minute, I heard you mention, you know, Kyle and DeMar. Guys, those are two superstar, all-star players, and they did not play well in the first two games in Cleveland. Not surprised at all that Toronto is tied 2-2 after the performances I have seen from both of those guys. They have played out of their mind. They have done a great job, and they have beaten the Cavaliers' backcourt. Listen, in Cleveland right now, I wouldn't call it panic, but certainly the Raptors have the Cavaliers' attention. And as we all know, guys, after the first two games, we pretty much thought that was impossible. But here we are. It's a great story. Don't get me wrong, I'm from here, and believe me, I still think the Cavs win this. But I got a lot of respect for Coach Casey, who's done a great job getting his team back to even this series.
So who's getting the focus in Cleveland in terms of the critical analysis? Is it always on LeBron? Is it on Kyrie and Love? Who's it on right now?
No, it's Kevin. It's Kevin Love right now. And, you know, Kevin's had open looks, and I watched Tyronn Lue after the first quarter on national TV say, and they asked him, you know, what's up with the offense? He goes, look, we're getting good looks right now. We've got to knock down the jump shots. And Kevin Love, you know, for whatever reason, couldn't make a jump shot. He looks beat up physically. He looked tired in that game. He did not play in the fourth quarter. You know, Kyrie didn't shoot the ball all that well. But the Cavs also dug themselves a hole. Guys, when you're on the road, it's hysterical to me. After two games, I was on with your morning show. They were doing their program from our studios in downtown Cleveland. And the guys were like, please don't embarrass us, and we're so sorry. And I told them, I said, guys, let me tell you something. You're going to have two games at home. If you win these games at home, this series is totally turned around. And that's exactly what's happened. The Raptors won one less game than the Cavaliers. I mean, I feel like a lot of fans here in Cleveland are looking past the Raptors. I know the Cavaliers are not.
With Tony Rizzo from ESPN Cleveland, there were a lot of people here in Toronto looking past this series, quite frankly, Tony, because the power of LeBron. I mean, he's been to five straight Eastern Conference Finals, and even though the Raptors took 2 of 3 in the season matchup, the belief was when it was go time, it was going to be go time for Cleveland. And they sweep through Detroit. They sweep through Atlanta. The Raptors played really sloppy basketball against Indiana and Miami. They basically survived against those two teams. And when you found out Valanciunas wasn't going to be a factor in this series, it felt like a mountain that simply couldn't be climbed. And then when you tack on the first two games, it became even more difficult to get optimistic about them even taking one game. So this is foreign territory, I think, for almost every Raptor fan right now, Tony, is the idea that not only are they in this, but they may have found a button to push where they could find a way to actually win it. In terms of the atmosphere in Cleveland tomorrow, I'm going to be fascinated to see what that building's going to be like, because they've been borderline bored the first, six games at home, because they swept through the first two rounds and then beat up on the Raptors. Are you expecting anxiety, excitement? I mean, what kind of a reaction from the crowd should we be expecting tomorrow night?
Well, you mentioned LeBron, and I think that the confidence that Cleveland has, and there is a sense of confidence still, even though the series is tied at 2-2. And I just got done watching the national guys here, Wilbon and Kornheiser, saying they still think the Cavs can win. But, guys, let's face it here, okay? The Cavs' warts have been exposed. They have weaknesses, all right? Biombo has shown that the Cavs don't have a big man. Timothy Mozgov is half injured, and his confidence is shot. He is on the bench. They have been working through the paint. He has been a force defensively and defensively. The Cavaliers are not as good as they were last year. They rely on the three-pointer. And when they miss three-pointers like they did, I think they started through 2 or 19 or 3 or 19, whatever it was last night. When you start like that, that puts pressure on your defense. And the Cavs defensively are not great. Kyrie Irving, Kevin Love, and J.R. Smith are defensive liabilities. Everyone in the league knows it. So the Cavs' game plan of trying to outscore people is being tested in this series.
Brian, I don't know if you did this on purpose, but this guest is giving me hope.
I know.
I've never felt better about the Raps than this guest right here.
I think Tony's
well,
on
guys,
the take
minute, you
here.
Guys, wait a minute. Brian, wait a minute. You guys really don't think, Jamie and Jeff, you don't think you guys have a shot?
No. It's all about people bashing Canada and the Raps, and they got no chance, and then they got killed. But I'm actually, this is very uplifting for me.
I think you've given some love to the group, but I think there's still a lot of optimism because of LeBron James.
Yeah, that's right. Guys, it's a star-driven league. It really is. And believe me, we're going to watch tonight. You know, I don't know what's going to happen, but, you know, OKC, they have two all-stars as well. And that's all you need in this league. And I know the Cavs' big three, even though Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving are great players, they don't have a lot of playoff experience. And that is showing in this series. They are going cold. The only thing the Cavs have really been able to count on is LeBron. And I've done this, guys, for 30 years. The first year I covered the NBA was 1986. And I'm telling you, I've seen everything. So nothing would surprise me, nothing. Do I still think the Cavs win the series? Yes. But it won't be easy. Now we know it's going six, possibly seven games.
Can't wait for it. You'll be all over it down there, ESPN in Cleveland. Thank you for taking time today, Tony. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Brian.
There he is, Tony Rizzo from ESPN Cleveland.
We love that guy.
Well, you know what? He
just had a positive vibe about the Raps.
You know what he sounds like? He sounds like what we were saying about the Raptors after the first two games. We were pumping the tires of Cleveland and being overly analytical about the Raptors and overly critical about the Raptors. Now, they deserved it with the way they played the first two games.
Right.
But that is the reverse psychology. That's a guy in that town who's saying, uh-oh, I know what our team is capable of, also know what their warts are, and I'm impressed with the opponent here who's pushing back.
Right.
And Cleveland's a team, everything goes south for Cleveland. Cleveland and Toronto are mirror images in a lot of different ways. They don't win. So there probably is a part of their psychology thinking, of course it's going to go south.
Well, you know LeBron's going to ultimately do his thing. He's LeBron. Don't you just kind of hope that the other guys, his support staff, is just going to keep dragging through the mud and that's the realistic chance?
That's what it comes down to.
Yeah.
Like Kyle and DeMar, I think they've already solidified themselves as the greatest duo in Raptors history. And if they take it the next step here, then we're talking a completely different level. I mean, it pushes Vince out of the way. It pushes Bosch out of the way. Antonio Davis out of the way. But Kyle and DeMar have to play like they did in games three and game four. They got to hit shots. They got to be aggressive. They've got to get to the line. They've got to get to the paint. And Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving have to be average to below average.
Big difference from 35 and 32 and 9 and 10.
Exactly.
Like,
That's the ball game.
It sounds stupid, but that's the difference,
right? I mean, that's the NBA. Like, if your star players play like that, you can win any given night.
It's amazing, though. Again, you go back to 7 days ago. Lowry, DeRozan, these guys. You know, like they earned it. They weren't playing very well, but it's amazing how sports in a week you can build your stock up or you can break your stock down.
They have this deal going where they're talking to the media and it's almost like they're disgusted at some of the comments that are made about them. I've noticed that. They're like, it's just us in the locker room and some of the things you guys come, we don't come up with anything, man. Like, we watch the game and you're either real good or you're not. That's what it's been anyway.
Well, they absolutely have been. Their play has been so polarizing. They've either been awful or heroic.
Yeah.
Right.
Best game I've ever seen or the worst I've ever seen them.
Exactly. Like the swings, I don't recall a game where I walked away. I'm sure there's been a couple of them over the course of the past month where you said, yeah, they were pretty good.
Yeah.
But usually it's, wow, they were outstanding or, man, they were terrible last night. But that either goes one of two ways. They either do track it and do hear it and use it as motivation.
Right.
Or they don't listen to the white noise, which would be even more impressive, and they don't get built up when they're getting praised, and they don't allow themselves to get buried when they get buried.
Oh, I know athletes. They all say that they don't pay attention. When I was in the Leafs locker room, you couldn't bring the papers in. And you remember when they used to have all the articles?
Yeah, Sports Scan, it's called. We still get it, yeah.
And those weren't allowed in the locker room. But nowadays, guess what? As soon as you get in your car or your couch at home, the iPad, it's impossible to ignore it.
Is it weird last night, right at the end of the game, when we watched the Rod Smith do his work? I was thinking, is Lowry going to go up and shoot shots at 1 o'clock in the morning in front of everyone? That's an ignorant thing for me to say, but that's what I thought. Not just in the bad days. I want to see you go out there on the good days.
Well, too. And think about what has happened with Kyle when he couldn't hit shots in that first round. He did play a bit of a hero role.
Right.
Instead of going to the practice court, he goes out to the main court. The media was out there. They're snapping pics. They're tweeting about it.
The only thing I thought about last night, because I was happy for him, because he looked satisfied. Like, he knew he played his heart out.
Right.
And he deserved, like, he
deserves all the accolades in the world. The guy has been a beast the past couple of games.
That's the first thing I thought about is, like, are you going to go back up and work on the court?
All right, we're not doing
that. No.
We don't have time.
What do you mean?
I know what you're going to do.
What?
You're going to replay a question that I asked Tony.
You might be close to a world record today, bro.
I'm so mad we're doing this because now I get yahoos on Twitter that are tweeting me saying, oh, I think you may have just broke your own record.
Hey, it's our time to have a little fun.
Well, we'll do it
later.
You're
the great host.
He is the great host, but we will do it later.
I'm the great host. I'm the Vladimir Putin of radio.
Yeah, you are. When you walk in, there's a sigh, a collective
right.
sigh.
It's a big gasp.
Ooh, the
there
gasp.
Goes that loser back onto radio. All right, thanks, Tony. I mean, Tony's a hype man for the Raptors. That guy, he's on the MLSE payroll, Tony Rizzo down in Cleveland.
You have to, Frank.
Frank Love Rizzo. Yeah, but you're like this guest is the greatest.
Well, I almost said Frank Rizzo.
Yeah, I know. I was worried about that. Hey,
well, that's why I just said this guest.
I know, because I
then I hear her. His name's Tony.
Oh yeah, right in your ear right away. It's Tony.
Thanks.
Thanks, losers.
All right, Bob McKenzie will join us in studio around 6:20. We'll get back into the sad news about Gord Downie.
Yes.
Get back into the Sharks win last night, the Penguins news, the Jays are in Yankee Stadium. I mean, there's a lot going on here. This is Overdrive, TSN 1050, and on the TSN Go app.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog. Your drive home just got a lot more fun on TSN 1050, the voice of Toronto sports.
On Twitter at HayesTSN, Robert tweeting and saying, are you guys serious today? Is this Mail It In Friday? How about some love for Mitch Marner? Mitch Marner had 4 assists again last night at the Memorial Cup.
I don't even know what to think of that Memorial Cup. It looks like a joke. I mean,
well, it is for him.
Just give them the trophy and let them go home. That's a circus.
They beat the best team in the Western Hockey League.
9-1.
Yeah, 9-1.
Brandon. Yeah, it was awful.
What is that?
I started tracking it last night about halfway through. Brandon's 0-2, too. Like, they were supposed to be. I mean, I was back and forth. Actually, this weekend when I was in Vegas, one of the guys that was with our boys group coached in the WHL. And he said Brandon's a strong team, but he said London, you know, should walk the table. And another good friend of mine did coach in the OHL this year. And I texted him, and I said, how good is London? And he said, not going to be a problem.
Man, they won the final 3 rounds. Sweep, sweep, sweep.
Yeah.
They swept Kitchener, Erie, Niagara.
And Owen Sound was the only one that took him
And that was
six,
in the first round? Yeah. I think they won game 1 of this series or something like that. But Mitch Marner has 9 points
in two games.
So we'll continue that conversation in the final hour. Bob McKenzie in studio at 6:20. More Raptors talk looking ahead to game 6 tomorrow night, or game 5. I'm getting ahead of myself here. And we're up on TSN 2 in the next hour. This is Overdrive, TSN 1050, and on the TSN Go app.